Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Today, we're talking to the Ambassador of Poland to South Africa, Ms. Anna Radochowska-Brockowicz. Welcome to the show, Ambassador.
Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Amalia. I'm very, very glad to be here with you today. And good morning to everyone, to our listeners.
Ambassador, you commenced with your position as Ambassador to South Africa in 2013, and your portfolio of responsibilities extends across to another 8 countries, namely Botswana, Lesotho, Mozambique, Malawi, Namibia, Swaziland, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. It's an enormous portfolio. Can you tell us, are there any specific milestones that you want to achieve during your term of office?
Yes, indeed, I would say that this is very true, that it is a very big challenge and a very big task to be accredited to 9 countries. But I would also say that these countries are very well chosen. I'm always, when I'm being asked what are the countries that I'm accredited to, I'm saying a Southern SADC countries, because they are all neighboring each other. And it is very true that sometimes also I'm saying that just to be accredited to South Africa would be enough. But unfortunately, it is not possible. And I need to be involved in many issues in all 9 countries. But at the same time, it gives you another perspective, a regional perspective. And it is also very helpful and very useful in conducting your tasks even in South Africa.
Well, it must be offer incredible diversity, but also great collaborations, cross-border collaborations between countries in terms of what they're doing in their respective regions and how that affects the entire, as you say, Southern SADC region.
Yes, exactly. And I see very clearly that the cooperation within the SADC region is very deep, is very elaborated. There are various mechanisms basically at every level, starting from the experts level until the highest possible political level. And in the end, it works very well. But having said that, I would like to say that there is also some yet another perspective that maybe we should explore together, because me coming from the EU and dealing with the countries that are so closely linked with each other within the SADC region, often people would tell me that the EU model is a model for the SADC region as well.
And what's your view?
Because they can really benefit from, for example, the solutions that we adopted in terms of not really political cooperation, because this one exists here very well, but in a sense of economic cooperation. We have a totally free market. We have no borders. It really helps to develop a given country, and especially since there is so much emphasis on the issue of regional cooperation. And if you would analyze your economic data, you see that the trade exchange and even investment sometimes within this region, the level is not that great, the volume of trade exchange and investment within the African countries. And this is why they are saying that the EU model is very useful. And the promotion of regional economic integration is one of the tasks and objectives of the EU in South Africa and in other countries of the region. I just can mention the EPAS, Economic Partnerships Agreement, that were adopted quite recently by both sides. They were negotiated for many years, but finally it is done. And, of course, it is about opening the European market for the goods coming from the SADC region and vice versa. But also, one of the elements of this agreement, it is the support for the regional integration between the SADC region countries.
Mm. And trade exchange is obviously critical to any economy.
Yes, yes. For example, one form of this kind of support is to facilitate development of the infrastructure, because this is also important.
And is there a particular project that you're working on that extends across the different countries that you're accredited to?
As Poland, bilaterally not, but we are supporting, we are quite active and quite present in whatever the EU is doing in this region. And we are bound, the EU and the countries of the region, by the Cotonou Agreement. And one of, you know, mechanisms established within this Cotonou Agreement, it is called political dialogue between the EU and a given country of the region. And I joined other ambassadors in Suwazi to participate in this political dialogue. But on this occasion, we had a quite, you know, good opportunity to also go and see various development projects.
What I find incredible is that there is so much cross-collaboration and integration that is happening across continents, and obviously that, I think, is to the benefit of any country that you go into to help them advance and progress.
Yes, for example, we have, you know, if we should not, when talking about even bilateral cooperation, let's say, between South Africa and Poland, or Poland and any other country of the region, we can not limit ourselves only to so-called bilateral cooperation, bilateral ties only. I mentioned already the EU channels, but there is yet another channel which is very important, especially for the countries here, is the UN channel. And there are also various mechanisms and possibilities to strengthen our bilateral cooperation in this multilateral context.
It's fascinating. So we've got the national level, we've got the regional level, and we have the global level coming through. Ambassador, being female ambassador in Africa sometimes touches on sensitive points, whether it's culture, religion, and tradition. In your experience, do you think that women ambassadors face different challenges to their male counterparts, or are they judged differently?
Yes, Dr. Amaleya, thank you very much for this question. It is not that easy to answer it, though. But I would say, based on my experience, also from other appointments, from the post that I held before in various places all over the world, I would say that being posted to sub-Saharan Africa as a female ambassador is quite a good thing. Because even if you would see how many women we see in the countries of sub-Saharan Africa, in various important positions in the politics, public life. So those countries are actually leading the whole world. So what I mean by it, that while exercising my tasks as ambassadors, I'm meeting such people, and it means many women at the very high or highest position in the country. So it is not that much challenging. So that's okay. I'm not really being faced with some kind of difficult situation. There are little challenges, though, but it is not like that in some other religions, that you may not sometimes be able to shake a hand with your interlocutor, because the religion prohibits that. It is not the case. And if you are at this high position of being an ambassador, people respect you, both women and men, in this region and also in South Africa.
Do you think that part of it also has to do that we've almost had this wave of women coming through, that because we have more women, that it makes it easier for other people to be more receptive and accepting of women in high positions?
I think yes, because the status quo I mean, that big, high number of women, for example, that you have in the parliament more than 40%, in the government as minister, both ministers and deputy ministers, also I think more than 40%. Yes. The result of that is that people are exposed to women at these high positions. And people and men are used to that. So in this sense, it is very helpful. But as I'm saying, it is just... you know, at this highest position, etc. And here we did not really mention the issue of rural women, women in their communities, of course.
No, we haven't. Yes, and yes. The reality is that probably 50% of our women are rural. So it's looking at disparities between the urban life and rural life and how we can make things better for our rural folk.
This is very true. But also, if you would count how many, count the percentage of women that are holding high-level positions also in the provinces, and even at the local levels, again, you have quite a number of women at these very important positions. Also, if you would come back a little bit to the parliament, then both speakers of both houses are women as well. So... The problem maybe that we are facing here a little bit, as far as I can see, you know, I'm a guest in your country, but I observe, of course, and I may say that maybe it is that these elites are a little bit detached from the communities that sometimes they are coming from directly. So maybe it is about that, because normally... and it is very well proven for and very well known for many, many years now. And it was calculated, analyzed by the UN, that you need a so-called critical mass to bring a change. And this critical mass is 30%. And in this case, it will be 30% of women at these key positions. And basically, you have that number. In South Africa, even you have more women at this exposed position. So what about your change that was supposed to be brought?
Visibility and numbers, I think, is absolutely one thing. But you're right. If you're in those types of positions, what are you doing for the rest of the community? What are you doing for the rest of the population to ensure that other women are coming through, not necessarily within the political sphere, but in other sectors of society?
Yes, yes, this is very true. But you see... if we are talking about gender equality and equal opportunities, because this is also very important, equal opportunities for both men and women, what is very important? It is education and also civic education. You cannot just sit and wait, okay, there is a woman, one woman or two or even ten, coming from our community, and they are now ministers or parliamentarians, so I will sit at home, do nothing, and they would bring this change for me. No, because that they are there, it is very important, but it is not enough. The civic education, an education in general, but a civic education for everyone, and you need to start in your own family. And then through the whole schooling system until the latest stages of the university, you need to be able to broaden horizons of your kids, that they need to be active, because only in this way they can achieve something in their lives. But at the same time also that as citizens of this country or any country, they have the same rights, every individual, as all others. And even this woman, a mother and wife, she also has the same rights as this other one who is the new minister, for example. Mm-hmm. They need to be aware of that. And for this, you need to have a very good and broad, I would say, civic education programs.
And that's two points sure. that come to mind here is, one, there's an issue of having the rights, but the other point that you're raising is the responsibility of ensuring that those rights come through, And the third element is something that we touched on briefly in our offline discussion, and I think that concerns almost mental plasticity of when we're trying to drive a change, and a social change has to happen within a younger generation.
Absolutely. And this is why exactly it is so important that you show, starting from your own family, that you show good examples to your kids. And I can easily say that coming from Poland, because in our case, in the way you were brought up, it was no difference whether you had a daughter or a son. So in terms of an education system, it was all equal. And even your parents expected you to be good at school, to have good results, and, you know, also to go and to study at the university. It was normal. So, of course, it is for me, it is easier to say that. But having this experience, I would say that maybe you could think about something like this in South Africa and in other African countries as well, that you need to raise your kids, no matter their gender, in the same way. You cannot expect from a girl that, for example, if they are limited resources, only a boy would go to school. Maybe you should look for some other solutions, and then at the same time to say to your daughter that, okay, you, for example, if you are a mother, you need to help me with other kids or in the kitchen. No. They should know, both boys and girls, that they have the same rights, but also that they have certain obligations in the family, but they are more or less equal. So, of course, a change, a real change can be brought, I believe, by exactly those who are today kids. That is very true. But again, so there is a lot of obligation on the family itself to make the kids aware of their rights and their obligations, also in terms of building a new society with equal opportunities, no matter the sex, etc. But also there is an obligation of this for the state, obviously, to introduce a very good quality education. All this is very, very, very important. Of course, not easy because it is costly, especially we see these days what is going on at here at the South African universities. But this access to the education is key, so it must be done. And then also the civic education, not only through the state schooling system, but through the whole machinery of various non-government organizations, and there are many, really many in South Africa and in other countries who are very active. So also there is a responsibility for the mass media, for the journalists also. So there is the whole complex system. And of course we are talking about a process, but if we will put all these elements together, maybe this process after some time will bring concrete results.
I think that's a very interesting perspective of having the multiple stakeholders involved in the process, having that civic education, having the NGOs that are responsible, having instruments coming through from a government perspective and particularly emphasis on education, but also the moral responsibilities of citizens that they have their own obligations, and that ultimately to start and ensure that we have a more equitable and equal society, that it starts in childhood, right at the onset, on how we are socializing our children. Today, we're talking to the ambassador of Poland to South Africa, Miss Anna Raduchowska-Brockwicz.
Hi, I'm Zonke Dikana, a South African Afro-soul musician, songwriter, and producer. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
You're listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 902. Today, we're talking to the Ambassador of the Republic of Poland to South Africa, Ms. Anna Raduchowska-Brockwicz. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Ambassador, this program is all about gender equality. which increasingly is a global focus, and as such, building female leadership capacity is important for the future of women in Africa and across the world. We spoke briefly about the high concentration of women within the parliamentary space in South Africa, but how do you see female leadership in general?
Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Amaleya, for this question. Because it gives me this opportunity to explain how I perceive the issue of women's empowerment and the gender equality issue and equal opportunities concept. It is very important, and of course that we both agreed, it is very important to have as many as possible women parliamentarians. But it is not enough. Equally important, and I would say maybe even more important, is that all women have their independent source of income, and it would mean that they need to work. You know, you would ask any man whether he prefers or he believes that he should work or he can depend on some other family members and just leave whatever the other part of, you know, the couple will bring home. No one would be satisfied with that. Because if a man is being raised, he is being told, okay, you need to be educated because you need to have a good job. But it is very often not the case of women. In our case, in the case of Poland, all our women, of course, had to go to school because it was always obligatory. But then, very often they were told that, okay, your first obligation is the family. You may work eventually somewhere, but not necessarily they were told that, you know, it would be good if they are educated. And our statistics confirm the world trend that there is more women who graduated from universities than men. And also at school, they are receiving better notes often than the men's. So normally, you know, having this good education, they should be expected to give something back to the society, to the country. So the country also and the society should entrust them with a good job opportunity. Very often it is not the case. And if you would analyze what kind of jobs and occupations our Polish women have, you would see that they are basically in this not that well-paid professions, for example. And also they are not that high in this hierarchy of a given institution, because we still have, we may say, this glass ceiling that really exists. It is not visible at the first look, but if you would deep a little bit, then it exists. Especially in the private sector, the CEO's position, it is still, you know, women, not so many women there. But at the same time, I am very happy to share with you that Poland is number one country as far as the number of women who have their own small and medium-sized companies. So they are very, you know, eager to start their own business on their own.
I think that's a point to be very proud of.
We are very proud of that. In fact, our economy is very strong because of the small and medium-sized enterprises, because they are the backbone of actually our economy. So you see, this is very good. And also, I would like to say that the moment we are speaking, actually, we are in the process of forming a new government. And our new prime minister is going to be a woman. So I am very, very proud of that.
But that's increasing the visibility, and increasingly, if you've got women in positions of leadership or prominence, that creates a more role modeling effect. I would like to just go back a little bit to what you're talking about, small, medium enterprises and the success of female entrepreneurship in Poland in particular. Do you think that the entrepreneurial environment possibly lends itself more to women to being able to be more flexible so that she can accommodate family needs, she can accommodate and work around her own type of schedule as opposed to conforming to those traditional structures which are usually dictated by the corporate world, and that that's possibly one of the reasons for its success?
Definitely. I would agree very much so that our women, on average, very highly emancipated, they always wanted to work. Under the previous system, in the communist era, it was of course not possible to own your own business. So all our women used to work somewhere in the state-owned enterprises or other state institutions. Now the reality is different, and they can do something on their own. Very often they own so-called family business, for example. And it is all exactly because they are flexible, they are capable, they are well-educated, but also they know how to manage under extreme stress situations or to deal at the same time with many challenges. Challenges that are related to their work, but also to their family. And we even have a saying in Poland that if you don't know what to do or how to deal, how to approach a problem, send a woman. She will manage. What we could see now for many, many years, observe, for example, in the UN system, is that we have this extremely important international conventions and other agreements, and the majority of our countries adopted them, ratified them. So they even, it became to be their legislation, that it is about equal treatment, equal rights, equal opportunities, etc. But it is not enough. What is important is the implementation of these documents.
And that is a point which is raised time and time again. We have a lot of legislation, we have a lot of good ideas that are in place, but it's the implementation that seems to be letting everything down.
Yes, but referring a little bit, coming back to what we were talking about, just a few minutes ago, is that women should take an action in their own hands. They need to be active. They need to request. They need to request that the laws, these laws are implemented. Otherwise, it will not happen. I very quickly realized that no matter from where you are coming from, the challenges that women face all over the world are similar. All over the world, women tend to earn less for the same work with the same qualifications as men than men. And in Europe, it is on average 17%. Then also these traditional stereotypes that exist. We are all coming from very patriarchal societies. As I say, in some countries, the progress, the big progress was already achieved, in some less.
In one way, it's comforting to know that similar problems are being experienced across the world. But on the other hand, it is disappointing. But what you raised was the issue where we have got our global village, where we have got greater connectivity. And I think that we need to use that connectivity and those networks to better effect and almost mobilize more women around those particular areas so that we come with solutions which will work not just in one environment or territory, but make them global solutions to these global problems.
This is very true, but I agree very much. But also what I have experienced in my professional career is that if we are discussing gender issues and equal opportunities policies, this discussion shall not be limited only to women.
You're right.
By this I mean that only women participate in these discussions. Only women are being invited to various gatherings, meetings, etc. What this subject should be dealt by, I would say women, but really men.
Which almost isolates the issue, and it has an excluding factor.
That's the thing. Even the quota system was adopted in many countries. It was just to promote the gender equality issue and to have quick results.
And I do think that quotas offer the point of critical mass to help to drive change. But when we're looking at gender equality and think we want something equal, we are in effect taking something away from men in order for women to have that equality. And if you're not talking to somebody and you're just trying to extract that power, as it were, then it limits the progression.
Yes, the quota system is considered to be very controversial. And opinions are divided. Some people would say they accept or they want this system to be introduced, to be approved. Others would say no. But you know, it is like something coming from the top. But then, of course, we shall not forget to complement the whole system with something what is so-called bottom-up, coming from the root level and goes, so it means goes from the communities, from individual women, and I would also say that we should not limit our expectations only to the local women, rural women. What about men? If we are talking education, it is not only for women, but also for men. I said at the beginning of our conversation, I would believe that this education should be equal for for your sons and your daughters, equal, the same. They should learn together what are the life opportunities and life challenges. And already starting from this early childhood, they should cooperate, they should complement each other. They should not be like tasks reserved only for men or for women. They should learn as kids, also at school later on, that they should cooperate, that they should support each other, and to try to build through this system this new partnership model that we also mentioned today during our conversation.
All vital points. And what I particularly took out there in terms of looking at moving forwards from a woman's point of view and development, one area which you raised is to not be dependent on somebody else for a source of income, to have your own independent source of income, because that is a sense of empowerment, to be able to take action, to be more prepared, the inclusiveness of civic education and rights as being fundamental on moving things forward. Ambassador, one of the questions that I ask all my guests on this program who have made significant achievements in their respective fields, whether that's politics or the business environment, is about their key drivers and factors to success. So could you please share with us a few of the factors that you regard have been contributors to your success?
This question is not the easiest one to answer. But I would say that, again, we already talked a little bit, that the system of values and principles that you are being taught at home by your parents, but your grandparents, this is very important because it forms you. It forms you, really, starting from your early childhood. Another thing, what I believe, and probably in my case that was the case, that if you would come up based on your education in the family, within the family and school, etc., reading your constitution, the constitution of your country, about the rights of the citizens, etc., if on this basis you would build your own system of values and principles, you should stick to it. You should do every effort not to compromise this particular, your own system of values and principles, because this is important to you. This is your backbone.
Your integrity.
Your integrity. And then sometimes, you know, you are too young, you don't know yet what you would like to do in your life, where to, for example, work. So What I'm saying is that sometimes they are new opportunities, so suddenly which will arrive, and it would it would give you this new perspective, and it's okay. However, you are educated in some area, like it was my case, it was the economics, the foreign trade, but I joined the public system after the change, after the end of the communist era, because my system of values and principles allowed for that. I wanted to do something for my country, and I wanted to participate from the very beginning in the transition period towards democracy and transformation of the economy of our country from totally 100% state-owned towards an open market economy.
And
then
that's going from one extreme to the other.
Exactly. So you imagine all the challenges that we had to go through, and especially women that time, which were charged with, in addition to their work and these tasks I'm talking about, because many women joined this process. So what I'm saying is that sometimes you cannot program your life in advance. Sometimes opportunities, they come, and you need, if you believe you can contribute, you should grasp them. So that is important thing. Then my experience with the gender equality issues, I would say that the best one I've got in the United Nations. It was my first post at the beginning of my career. And I was exposed immediately from the very beginning to all those discussions coming from the most wonderful, very well-known sometimes women at holding various positions, from the business, from even the most famous actors sometimes, who will be engaged in some campaign against or for something, or the politicians, or women who used to work for the United Nations in the conflict situations. Very difficult tasks they were, charged with. They would share experience with you very often. How impossible sometimes their tasks were, or about their achievements, which were not really fully recognized, or attempts to decrease the scope of their achievements because maybe others wouldn't like that much, that it was a woman, let's say, who achieved that, what was not achieved before by men, for example. So I think it was a very good school for me, very good school. And it gave me this kind of ingredients, I would say, elements for me to, and understanding and knowledge and practice, etc., that I'm using, I believe, until today, even in South Africa, when I'm talking to many many partners, and I'm trying to promote the globally recognized issues.
And now, Ambassador, drawing on your learnings and experience, particularly from the gender equality components, we're coming to the end of our discussion, and I'd like it if you could please share a few words of inspiration to all those women who are listening to us today.
Yes, again, I would say it is not easy to give any advice, to anyone, because it is very individual thing. But I would say that wherever you are, whatever you do, you should try to be professional. Whatever job you are tasked with, you should try to do the job correctly, because through that you will be respected by everyone. You would be appreciated. And you should stick to your own personal values that you believe are important. And you should also, if any opportunity for you that you believe that in your area that or the area that you would prefer comes, you take this challenge. I know it is difficult, because it is also common, and many women say that if they are offered something big, they are afraid to take it because they believe they are not good enough. Maybe there are others who are better than them. But I know from my own life experience, at least you should give yourself a try. And then you will see whether you will continue or not. But very often, then you will see that you are able and capable and you can continue. And through this, you will be growing.
I think that's a very important message. Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us today. It's been wonderful to have you here.
Thank you very much indeed. It was my pleasure to be today with you. Thank you.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to the Ambassador of Poland to South Africa, Ms. Anna Radochowska-Brochwicz.